All right, so here we are live on the internet radio. And we had more people join in. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the call. If you want to do so, please say your name and location.
Michael Waterly.
Hey, Michael. Good evening. Welcome to the call.
Donna, Great Falls, Montana.
And good evening, Donna. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Mike. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, City.
And if there are more who want to announce themselves, please feel free to say your name and location.
Hello, hi. This is Ron in Mountain Grove, Missouri.
Good evening, Ron. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
And then welcome to the next caller. Well, thanks for being here. Please say your name and location.
Hi.
Good evening, Terry.
Terry.
Hi,
Terry.
Hi. Hello.
And then welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location. If you want to. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, Morgan, California.
Good evening, Morgan. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. And you all?
I think you all are doing fine.
Excellent. Thank you. I think I'm right on time.
Yes, it's, until the hour. Vin is not here yet.
Okay.
I wanted to mention something. Someone asked about their hotspot doesn't work too well in the area that they live. It could be also that the, the towers are not that great. So they might need a stronger hotspot, you know, the 3 foot one instead of the little one.
Yeah, I just did. Yeah, what?
All right. You fell out, you fell away, Michael, so I don't know if you had finished what you said. Talk to the next person. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Hi, Don from Rexall, everybody.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
All right. Thanks for being here, man.
Okay. I bought a pendant in my arm. I helped my arm, but it had been hurting me for a while, so.
All right.
I write up a testimonial.
Well, I wish you all the best with that.
Yep.
And I welcome those who just joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
James and Provo.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. And if there are more people who want to announce themselves, please feel free to say your name and location. And welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Hey, good evening. Hi, Joel in Chicago.
Hey, Joel. How are you doing?
I am doing well. And hello to everyone else.
Hello?
When?
It's a somber crowd.
When?
When?
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Nancy in Michigan.
Hello, Nancy. Welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you.
When, can you hear me?
Thank you for...
Can you hear me? You have a caller on line two. He says paperwork said to call in on line two, so I'm going to put him through now.
All right. Thank you. All right. Somebody call in over BBS radio. Please go ahead. If somebody came in over the phone line from BBS radio, please speak up. So, Doug, I don't know if you connected somebody to our show over here, but I cannot hear the voice.
Yes, we just dropped him because he didn't come on.
Okay. We had more people coming in on the conference line. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Michael Mobile.
Hey, Michael Mobile. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
From Los Angeles.
Who was it, lady?
Jeff from Los Angeles.
Hello. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Marilyn Pittsburgh.
Good evening, Marilyn. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here.
All right.
Marilyn in Pittsburgh, are you the one that's been coming on for forever?
Me?
Yeah, have you been coming on a long time?
I think, yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Who's this? Who was that speaking?
Oh, it's Joel in Chicago.
Oh.
I just found it out every time I come on. Next thing you know, there's Marilyn.
Oh.
Stalker. I'm just having fun.
Good evening to this, to those who just joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Susan in Delaware.
Susan, good evening. Welcome to the call.
Hi. Thank you.
All right.
You know, we have three Marilyns now.
That's the voice of a Marilyn I remember.
I was
going to say that. There's the tone.
I'm in Michigan, Joel.
Actually, I think I have an upcoming trip to Michigan. Grand Rapids and then Detroit. We're trying to confirm right now. It's either going to be the 4th or the 5th or the 8th or the 9th of April.
Oh, wow. What do you do?
What we do is we do healthcare management, and we do auditing of major health systems. It's a tier one company, tier one automotive.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I want to welcome those who just joined. Please say your name and location.
This is Edna in Snohomish, Washington.
Guten Abend, Edna. Ich willkommen
dich. Guten Abend. Thank you, thank you.
Snohomish.
Good evening. Welcome. Hello, Wynn.
Pam.
Hello, Ham.
San Diego, California.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. It's Pam.
Pam with a P. Yes, correct.
Hi.
Hi.
I frequently spray you in the pan.
Oh, I just...
This is only for those who are getting it.
Yeah. That's kind of like, that's a grenade joke. It took about 5 seconds for everyone to click in.
Yeah, it did. I frequently spray you in the pan.
All right. If there are more people who have joined in and have not announced themselves, please feel free to say a name and location.
There's a monetary charge if you don't.
just a quick hello to Snohomish. This is Dwayne in Snohomish.
Hi, Wayne.
You're from Snohomish?
Good to know.
Huh.
Snohomish, Washington. Wow. Lake Rossiter here.
Yeah, I live on...
Yes, Wayne, we hear you.
Oh, hi there.
We hear you now.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Hey, let's get on really good behavior because Barry Morrow is going to be on.
All right.
He called me last minute. I didn't announce it.
So where are you now, Wynn? Did you get back home yet, or are you still in L.A.?
No, who wants to know?
Your guardian angel.
Everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
I'm hiding out.
It's not working.
Okay.
Is my cloud worker?
Sounds so clear, Wynn.
No, he's real garbled.
Is Michael Adler here?
He just joined in.
Michael Adler just joined in?
I believe so.
Yes, I did. Michael, was that you that sat down in the room yesterday? Or did I see a ghost?
Hi, it's Barry.
Yes, I came in for a few minutes.
Okay.
I came in for a couple of minutes. It was a long day, and I was a little pushed, so I didn't think I was going to stay awake for the whole thing. So I took off.
I didn't think I would either, but I did.
Well,
Wynn.
Hopefully. Since you are the...
Is that Barry?
Yes. Hi, Wynn. I just got off.
Hi, Barry. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Let me see. Are we on the air, Hayes?
We are on the air, correct, yes. I'm mute the lines right now, and we can kick it off if you want to the recording.
Let's get started, okay.
All right, ready? Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
Hello, everybody. Everybody on our line, everybody on our calls, everyone on the Internet. This is Winfrey, and this is our Monday night call. Let's see if Terry's there. Terry, are you there?
Yes, here I am. Hi, everybody. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Terry. How are you?
I am great.
Hey, I like the pictures that Wynn sent me of the two of us.
Yes, they turned out really, really well.
I know. I usually spoil pictures, but your radiance transformed me.
I wish you would do that for me. Jeez.
All right. No, yours didn't
help. You look good.
So, what is this forum?
What is it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we, just a second, I'm just tuning in here to, just a moment. Every Monday, we have a conference call. And it's broadcast on the Internet. And there's a number of people who have been paying attention to my work. And we've been doing this Monday night session for quite some time. And it's basically, I don't know, if you're on this planet right now, people have a little anxiety, people don't know what's happening next. And so there's a group of people that have just paid attention to my talk with the Elohim, and this is like a supportive situation. We probably have, usually, you know, we have the call, we have the Internet, we have replay lines. We have something like every call, maybe 300-400 people are listening. In fact, I'll unmute them. Hang on a second. Some of them. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No. I can hear you, but you haven't said anything yet.
Yay, Barry.
Well, what I have learned is there's nothing to say.
All right,
you know,
all right. I'll be patient.
This is not a normal kind of interview show. Okay? This is like, hi, everybody. Welcome to Monday Night with Winfrey. And we have a special guest tonight that we're going to be talking to. His name is Barry Morrow. He is the Academy Award-winning screenwriter of the movie Rain Man. And
that is so cheesy.
It's right.
That echo effect, but I love it. Go on.
Barry happens to have a passion for writing things about crazy people. And he wouldn't call them crazy. He would call them, politically correct word?
I call them mutants.
Mutants.
Of which I aspire to be one myself, because without the mutant, everything stays the same and nothing ever changes. So they're all mutants in some way. They're too smart. They're too heavy. They're too skinny. They're too self-destructive. They're too whatever they are. They're just too much to be called normal. And how can you not find that kind of person interesting? So that's why I write about them.
And, of course,
when Barry met me, he thought he hit a home run. Okay.
Well, you're on the grid, and probably the spectrum, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I like you. You have no other redeeming qualities, Wynn, except for your weirdness.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, Barry, here is something somebody emailed me today. They said they saw it on LinkedIn, and they said, wait a second. Oh, maybe you didn't write it. I thought you wrote it, okay? Here, I read this on LinkedIn and copied it down. I wanted to send it off after our last conversation. I thought it was timely considering the call this evening. It reflects us all. Weird is good. Enjoy, Joel. But you know what? I guess you didn't write this. I thought he said you wrote it, okay? He mentioned your name earlier.
I would vote for it. Weird is good, yes.
Here, I'll read this to you. I like when they call me weird. Weird is good. I tell them normal is blah. You don't want to be blah. Blah is boring. Boring people are forgettable. I like weirdos. They are interesting. They have crazy ideas. They have passion. Weirdos separate from the pack. Weirdos change the world. Weirdos read. Weirdos make us think. Weirdos don't see anything as impossible. Anything is possible. Just give us enough time. Weirdos are contrarians. They think differently and act even more differently. Normals try to fit in. Weirdos stick out without really trying. Weirdos aren't driven by money. Money is a destination. Weirdos are all about the journey. Weirdos don't care about what others think. They only care that they think and want to change how they think. Weirdos come in all shapes and sizes, colors and countries, and they're not new to the tech industry or industry in general. Weirdos thought it made sense to get on the Mayflower from England to settle in a new land. Weirdos thought we should get rid of slavery. Weirdos insisted that women should also have a vote. The world would suck if it wasn't for weirdos. Instead of trying to get our kids to fit in, we should help them celebrate why they are different. Let's start to teach kids to embrace weird. Weird is good, and let's not stop until weird is normal. So what do you think, Barry? You didn't write that, huh?
Well, it started off clumsily, but by the time you finished, I have to say I agree with all of it. And I wish I had written it. And if I had written it, then that's a problem I have. And I have to get fixed because I don't recall it. Sounds like something I might have said, but it was too eloquent and too long, so I doubt that, too. So I just don't know.
You would have said it better if you wrote it, right?
At the beginning, I would have, yeah. Like I say, it started off sort of like a clumsy bird, and then once it got airborne, it just kind of soared. What's the feeling of your group regarding what was said? Because if I didn't write it, I certainly endorse it.
Well, one of the things that makes me feel more at home. I never feel quite at home, so it really makes me feel at home. And the other thing of it is, my relatives came over on the Mayflower.
There you go. Genetically, you've got...
You're genetically weird.
That's not to say that there's anything wrong with, you know, average, normal, whatever the word would be, persons. If there are, I mean, it's got to be like four people, but... You know, and that's weird, too, when you think of it. So.
Okay. Now, listen, Barry, I want to show you something that we figured out on this conference line, okay? And I hope this works, because we've done it before, and, you know, and what I want is I want everybody, I'm going to unmute the lines, I want everyone to give a round of applause for our special guest tonight, Barry Morrow. Just a moment. Okay. We are unmuted. Let's go, guys.
It's hard to clap and hold a phone at the same time. Yay.
Wow. Whatever that was.
Wait a second.
That's not Pam. I could tell. That was pretty real.
That's the sound of one hand clapping, okay?
And so I see, it sounded like everybody had disappeared, but you had simply muted them.
I muted them, yes.
How do they feel about that?
About being muted? About me being in such a control position here?
However you want to frame it, it just seems like, well, it's probably, there would be too much staticky noise and people, the dog barking and all those wonderful sounds, but it would probably be
You know what? One of the things about having an audience on a conference call is that everything can happen in the background. You hear toilets flushing, you hear sinks running, you hear cars honking their horn, and you hear wives yelling at their husbands.
My toilet can't possibly flush if I'm on my phone. So if it does, it's the end of the world. Everybody duck and cover.
You are one of the few people. So, you know, I don't know if Barry's going to be available. We were thinking of doing a special call on Saturday with Barry as a fundraiser, but we'll have to check and see if he's available to show up. But I'll tell a little bit about Barry and his escapades with weird people. And it started out, of course, with Rain Man, and there's an incredible real story behind the writing of Rain Man, which we'll touch on. And then he wrote a movie, which, you know, it's interesting. I remember seeing his movies when I was young. It was a TV movie on Karen Carpenter. And I don't know if you guys remember the Carpenters. They were a great singing group. What was their biggest song, Barry?
Oh, they had so many. We've Only Just Begun and Close to Me. And
We've Only Just Begun. Right. And Karen Carpenter was one of those people that starved herself. What's the name for that?
Well, first of all, she was, let's put it in the order of importance. She had, by almost everybody's assessment, including, you know, divas like Barbara Streisand, one of the purest pop vocal voices of this era or any era. And she was oddly a drummer and her brother was a partner and composer, and he was a pianist. He basically played a piano and played drums, and she sang. And they got discovered by Herb Alpert and others, and became for a good 12 years, maybe not 12, maybe it wasn't that long, but because she died, but at the height of their career, they were everywhere. I wasn't a fan of their music, frankly, until I was really far into the screenplay. I agreed to write it because she died of a very little known disease then, which is now universally known as anorexia. And it's not to say girls weren't, and boys, some weren't starving themselves to death prior to that, but like Rain Man and autism, you know, these things weren't known or discussed. So, again, I was attracted to the anomaly of a young, good-looking girl with an angelic voice, you know, basically dying from self-starvation. So, then the reason I wasn't a huge fan of the music is everything was, most of it was, that I heard on the radio at least, was some up-tempo stuff. And this is during the age of, you know, post-Vietnam and not quite before disco, and lyrics had messages, and folk was really the basis of it all. And so the Carpenters, for me, were not, that was what other people listened to. But I agreed to do the story for other reasons, namely my interest in what had happened to her, to sort of solve the mystery of it. But as a result, of course, I had to get all the albums and listen to them, which I did night and day throughout the research period and then writing the script. And at the end of which, I realized I was as big a fan as anyone out there of her voice, because no matter how happy the song might be, if you listen hard enough, you'll hear the pain in her life and the grasping for a way out in her voice itself. And then I was hypnotized by her. But anyway, that's the Karen Carpenter story.
Thank you. Now, the movie with Mickey Rooney, that was on TV. What was that called? That was called...
It's a real hard title. It's called Bill.
Bill. That was about the same fellow that was in Rain Man, right?
No, that was the guy that I met just out of college, who was the opposite of Rain Man. I mean, Rain Man is pretty much universally known as the person who had more knowledge in his brain than any other human ever. Whereas Bill couldn't read or write, count, didn't even know his last name when I first met him. But he had a social genius that was off the chart. And he took me under into his world just with his smile and his just sweet manner. And Bill, I found out, had been institutionalized for 44 years from age 7 until, you know, well past his midlife. Just for being mentally retarded at an age when, if your family was poor and your parents didn't speak English and they were Russian, and you were a little slow, rather than adapt you to the neighborhood or the neighborhood to you, they sent boys like Bill on trains to institutions where he spent nearly half a century. And the miracle of Bill was that he didn't resent one minute of it. He embraced whatever life he had, whatever was around him, and he just never had a bad day in his life, no matter what horrible things happened to him and horrible things did. But
Barry, was Bill the guy that was looking out the window when you were walking to school?
No, he wasn't. Well, he was. He was looking out the window, but I was an adult. I mean, I was just out of college, but he was a pot scrubber in the kitchen at a very exclusive, old moneyed country club where my wife was a waitress. And at night I would go to pick her up in the parking lot behind the building, and I could see up there to the second story window the kitchen area. And it was there that I first saw Bill, who, once he saw me, didn't know who I was, but I was down there every night. He would wave and smile and pantomime something that was going on in the kitchen, usually having to do with pots or pans or spoons. And we saw each other this way, became friends this way over several hundred feet of distance and through various seasons, well into winter, before I actually met him in person. And it was a Christmas party at this country club, and the staff got to, you know, take over the institution, if you will, for the night, and all the members stayed home, and so I was invited in. It was a banquet, sort of Christmas party for the staff, and there he was at the other end of this fairly elaborate, you know, chandeliered banquet hall, sitting alone with a drink of water and a beetle wig on his head. So he was dressed up for the occasion. And he recognized me and stood up immediately and thrust his hand out and said, "Hey, buddy, my name is Bill." And so that began a friendship that, I mean, it wasn't planned on my part. The next day he asked me, you know, if, he told me he was out of some supplies. He needed toothpaste and had no way to get toothpaste in his life. So I figured I could do that. So next day I got him toothpaste. The day after that I got him reodorant, he called it. And then I got him wig spray for his beetle wig. And then after that I'd lost count. By that time I was just so happy to be with this guy, even though, you know, he could have been my grandfather, because of his personality and the sunny side disposition he had. And so, I could go on for hours about Bill, and I actually have, in different forums. I've done, like, a stand-up storytelling performance that was recorded in the 90s. It was out on CD and stuff, and I did, of course, in 81, the movie Bill came out, starring Mickey Rooney as Bill, and Dennis Quaid played a very young Barry Morrow, and that's what got me into the business, was just writing the story of our friendship, and it was written just as a story for my friends.
Now that came out before Rain Man, yes?
Yeah, well before. That was 81, and then there's a sequel in 83, and then I was on to the things like The Carpenter Story and others, which, you know, that I was in television. Then Rain Man was my first foray into feature film.
See, I didn't know that. I thought Rain Man was first, and television came later. So
Rain Man was 89, and Bill was 81, so...
I see.
It was a good decade for me. I got a lot of, you know, work and turned a lot of things down, made a few bad choices, but overall it was, you know, it was fun. It was like being, you know, a young baseball pitcher just in his prime and throwing strikes all the time, and, you know, and not that I'm unhappy now. In fact, I'm relieved that, you know, the pressure and the eyes and the expectations aren't on me the way they were when I was younger. But, you know, it was mainly good to be alive at a time when writers in television and motion pictures could write about people like Bill and Rain Man, or My Left Foot or Shine or any number of movies that would never be made today because the studios are not developing anything even remotely like them. They wouldn't do Rain Man today. They wouldn't do Forrest Gump today. So if you're in the movie business and you're trying to get stories told of the kind that I'm attracted to, that resonate with me, and I know a lot of people, then you've got to do independent filmmaking, and that means you don't just write the script. Find the story and write the script. You find the people who will pay for it. You find, you know, the agents who will show it to their clients. You have 1,000 emails, 1,000 phone calls, hundreds of meetings, lunches, driving from L.A. to Santa Barbara and back, on and on and on and on, and hope that you can pull it all together and still tell a story the way it was so easy for me to do earlier. And I do it every day because I love to tell a story.
Have you noticed that the music business has done the same thing as the movie business? Seems as much as I pay attention to it, that
I'm not that familiar with the music business like I am film, but certainly it's been set on its head. I mean, after Napster forward, there's very little money to be made recording music, and that was what music always was from, you know, I mean, the first records until then. And now it's hard for young people to break in because, nobody's signing you to recording contracts. I mean, unless you want to go American Idol route, but, you know, Bob Dylan was never going to make it past first cut on American Idol. In fact, he would have been one of the ones they showed how bad you can be. Or Neil Young or Tom Petty or Carole King or anybody with an imperfect voice has a hard time of it today. But in live performing, it's pretty much the only real big revenue sources for music. But will that stop people from making music? No. Even if you don't make a dime from music, if you have to make music, you will make it. And eventually, there will be ways in which society will be able to value that again and allow people to, you know, do that for a living rather than do it as a hobby. But technology is in great flux, and we make a lot of breakthroughs, but that also creates holes in the fabric of what we've taken for granted, and those holes have to be patched. And I'm hopeful that they will.
What do you think of people like Lady Gaga and Britney Spears and that? Did you see that new Korean guy who has the most hits on YouTube of any video? I believe 1.5 billion. Have you seen him sigh?
Yes, I know of all of the people you just mentioned. Yeah. Lady Gaga is my granddaughter's favorite person, so I can't say anything bad about her.
Okay.
And she doesn't even know who she is. She just likes the name Lady Gaga. So, but yes, this crazy Korean dude, he got himself in trouble. Turns out, a few years ago, he said a few bad things about the United States. And the places that have made him famous, but, you know, he sort of apologized for that. That's fine. He's like a lot of Asians today, Koreans, Chinese, Taiwanese, not so much Japanese. They've been hit pretty hard by the economy and, of course, that terrible tsunami, and I think they're just kind of, you know, licking their wounds right now, but the rest of Asia is going crazy with everything, and culture is one of them. And I think, you know, that video is hilarious. I liked it. I wouldn't want to see it more than twice, but
the side video, right?
The side video. I don't know.
The Korean fellow. His name is Psy, isn't it Psy?
I don't know. He's riding an imaginary horse. We're talking about the same guy.
Right. I was just going to tell people, if they want to go on YouTube, just do a search on Psy. And what's the name of that dance, Terry? Gengen style? And, I mean, what he did is he made a video that has a dance step in it. It looks like he's riding a horse, and a song called Gangnam Style, which is all in Korean. No one understands it, and it suddenly got 1.5 billion hits, the most hits of anything in video. It's became a phenomenon.
Well,
it's Terry Watson.
It's very high energy, and
yes.
Mesmerizing in its own way.
I actually liked the guy better than some of the other pop stars that seem to get, how would you say it, decadent, you know? Like, there's a decadence that has come in to some of the American pop stars in their major videos. But I didn't see him as being so decadent. Even though, you know, of course he talked about women, he was a little bit innocent in himself. That's the way it seemed. So,
Well, he hasn't been around long enough to become decadent, but...
Right,
you know,
give him a chance.
He's in the entertainment business. He will become decadent. It's almost inescapable. And there's a reason. There's a reason. And it's why you should never envy famous people. Their lives really do get insufferable. Can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. It's like prison. Wherever you go, you're stopped, you're hounded, you're adored, you're followed, you're photographed, you're lied about, it's like, wow, I worked so hard to get to the point where I don't have a moment's peace. So you retreat into this fake world that you create, you know, whether it's Michael Jackson's Neverland or Marlon Brando's island in Tahiti or just the big estate with armed guards or whatever it is, that's your world. And Tom Cruise has to live in that other world, which is a much smaller world than the one we enjoy. I mean, I think he would probably pay almost anything if he could, like, park his car, go into a Rite Aid drugstore, go down the aisles and look, see what's out there now. Because he hasn't done anything like that in probably 20 years. So the next time you
For the people that don't know about it, let me just mention this. Tom Cruise was in Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman. It was probably one of Tom Cruise's early movies that helped put him on the map. Could we say that, Barry?
Well, yeah, Risky Business was his first, I believe, or among his first, and that put him on the map. But Rain Man put him on the map called Actors, and he became an actor, really, with Rain Man. And then he quit being an actor. He became an action hero. And
were you on the set when they were making Rain Man, were you not?
Well, one would think, but there was a thing called a writer's strike. In 1988, when the picture was made, and so I could not go on the set. No writers were going on sets anywhere, and it was, you know, one of our longer strikes. Now, the last day of filming, which was downtown L.A., I did go on the set because I knew that I couldn't get into trouble with the Writers Guild or fellow writers, because the whole point of it is you're not crossing lines to provide services, which in this case would be writing services, so I never did that. So I was on the set for the last day, and I only did that in case anybody ever asked me, well, were you on the set? And then I have to tell you, in what, 22 or 3 years, no one has ever asked me that question when until you just did. And instead of saying, yes, I was on the set, of course I was on the set. I told you the real answer, which is I was on the set for a couple of hours. So there you go.
Hey, were you disappointed with the way the movie came out? I mean, I think the fact that you weren't on the set and it came such a classic, and it really was, seemed so put together. And how come that movie didn't get screwed up if you didn't have, like, even on the set control of it?
Well, you don't know anything about the movie business, I can tell you that.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, there are writers who are influential, mainly because of their relationship with the director. The director has been, since the 70s, and the French coined a term, auteur filmmaker. And basically, auteur which is the author, was the director. Now, prior to that, the director was the director. And the writer was the writer, and the costumer was the costumer. And, you know, makeup did makeup. But in the 70s, the director became the author of the film. And they started putting on the top of the film, a film by, rather than, you know, directed by. And it really screwed things up. And it's still not back to where it should be. I mean, directing is not, it's not like the only thing. It's just one of the things. It takes all of the things to make one thing good or bad. And, you know, there are auteurs, I think. I mean, Woody Allen was an auteur because he wrote, directed, produced, and acted. Sometimes even did some of the music. And when you do it all, then you are the author of it. No question. But if you are a director who is replacing another director because he just fell ill or got fired, and you come onto the set the first week of shooting, and you pick up where the other person, male or female, left off, and you finish the picture, and it comes out that says, a film by? That's pretty ridiculous. So I'm really opposed to this possessory credit, as it's referred to, a film by.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's directed by someone, it's written by somebody, and here are the actors. And that's the way it should be. But no, my being on the set or not wouldn't have made a whit of difference. Barry Levinson really didn't need me. And do I regret it? Oh, yeah, 4 Oscars later, and the defining moment of my career, not that I don't think I've done as good or better work, but that is it. When? Why would I regret it? I mean, I would just have to be the most biggest sourpuss in the world to look at something that turned out, you know, so good for everybody. And do I have mm-hmm. criticisms of it? Of course. You know? As I do of myself. And would I have made it better? I would have tried, but probably not. I mean, anyway, that was all those years ago. I'm not focused on any of that in my life. I'm focused on, like, today.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I want to give people a chance. We have about 12, 13 minutes left. And there's two things I want to do. I want to give people a chance to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a fellow in our group who goes by the name of Mac Boogaloo. And he emailed me and said, you know, he wants to start a Facebook group for all the artists and poets and everything in our group. So I want him to share his vision. So those of you out there that fit that category might want to join his Facebook group. But before we do that, let's just see. Now, I'll bet people are intimidated, Barry. I'll see if anyone actually comes forth and asks a question. I do know there's at least one person, at least one, and probably more, who would say he wants to be an actor and win an Academy Award. And he's out there, and he's actually a good actor. He lives in San Diego. But I won't say who he is unless he does. So if anyone wants to come on and say anything to Barry or ask a question, press *6. Uh-oh. Yeah, I knew this would happen. Oh, you can call.
Hi.
Is that Donald?
Hi, Donald. Don from Braxel Highwind.
Yeah.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, Don.
I got a question. Can anybody nowadays, could you still write a screenplay and like get an agent and sell a screenplay nowadays, or is that those days over?
No, you can, because the people who are making movies aside from the studios are, you know, independent producers and many majors, and you know, there are people. The movie business is bigger than ever, but it's just different in terms of now they're trying to appeal to a world market and they're trying to hit a home run. So $100 million movie is like pretty much where the studios start, whereas a movie like, say, Crash, that won the Academy Award 2 years back, I think cost $5 million. And yet it had the big stars because they were all willing to, you know, work at the same low, basically, scale rate, and they just believed, you know, in the product. But getting an agent has never been easy. It's a weird. I was told that it's a catch-22, and it's up to you to solve it, which is you can't get an agent until you've had something made, and you can't get something made until you, you know, have an agent. And, you know, I did one of those two things. I got something made without an agent. And even when I had a movie coming out, this first thing, Bill, I couldn't get an agent until it actually did come out, and I won an Emmy. And then all of a sudden, you know, I could get an agent.
Yeah, it probably helps if you get an Emmy.
Yeah. And then so, but nobody was interested the day before I got an Emmy. So, of course, these things are hard. There's so many screenwriters. And since anyone now can, you know, with computers being so easy and screenwriting programs and you don't have to do anything. You sit down right now and write the words fade in and start a screenplay, and, you know, like 250,000 people every year do that. And then studios make, you know, what, 30 movies or something. And but there's still hundreds and hundreds of movies made every year. And no
reason.
Can I ask
you one more technical question? You know,
yeah.
Sid Field's book, Screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, why does the writer need to write in all the camera shots? I mean, it seems like that would be something the director would do. I never quite got where they
use
the format.
I never write in camera shots. I mean, I might say it's a point of view shot, you know,
mm-hmm.
somebody looking at something.
Yeah, if it's necessary to get the point across of the scene or something.
The more that you try to direct the picture from the script, the further you get away from storytelling and the more you get into the architecture of a movie. So I wouldn't do it. It just doesn't help to read.
Yeah.
You know, it makes people conscious of the movie instead of the story.
Implies, though, that you kind of have to write in that style to get, like, an agent to look at or to get him to look at it. So you're saying that's not really true necessarily?
All you have to do really is, you know, use the slug line, which is the exterior and interior, whether it's office or house, day, whether it's night, and you have to establish your scenes in the traditional way.
So if I write another screenplay, I can quote you, and when I send a letter to my agent.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good.
You said it was okay that I do that.
You can certainly quote me. Yeah.
And I'll remind them that you won an Emmy. So.
Well, and an Oscar.
Don, are you a screenwriter?
I wrote a screenplay years ago. Didn't do anything, but I'm thinking about trying again.
Yeah, well, look, millions of people have written them, and you know what? And that's a very select club. That's an elite club. If you actually wrote a screenplay, as opposed to I am writing a screenplay, which is what most people are really doing. They are writing screenplays, but they don't finish them because they get to the second act, the end of the second act, around page 65, and they collapse because they haven't structured it carefully. And they can't keep moving forward into the third act because there's nowhere to go. And so they just sit there forever, and they never write the words fade out because they never finish it. But if you've actually finished some screenplays, then congratulations, you're already in a relatively small circle.
Barry, speaking to that structure, do you then have an outline prior to engaging in writing the story, or do you just start with a thought and then let it carry you forward?
Well, you can do it either way or probably 100 different other ways. For me, I like to structure it. I learned structure kind of by accident. There weren't really any books when I started. There was one I found that's no longer in print. Mostly I was just able to get a hold of some screenplays, none of which had been made, none of which were any good, but at least the person, you know, I could see the what the rules were. And then I finally figured out, sort of by accident, after I'd gotten some things made and had success, that I was sort of intuitively following dramatic rules that have been in place since Aristotle, really, wrote them down in what's called the Poetics, the rules of drama. And they haven't changed much. I mean, experimental films may try to change them, but the way we understand movie making today and storytelling today goes back thousands of years. And once you know those principles, wherever you get them, from a modern-day writer like Sid Field or go back to Aristotle, as long as you know what those are, then you can play with it a bit, you know, but don't ever forget them. So for me, I like to outline because that allows me to always see the structure of, you know, of the story. Then within that, I let it find its own way.
And the point you just made about people getting to the third act and then just kind of dying out, that is more or less because there is not an outline to follow?
Well, that's part of it. It's possible to write a bad outline and end up in the same place. But, you see, it's real simple. A movie starts with somebody who's in a relatively stable part of their life. I mean, nothing is happening. And then something happens, something huge that changes them and changes their circumstances. And they either then, as a result, they react by wanting to get rid of this thing or they want to go get this thing. And then the movie is all about preventing them from achieving that goal of either getting the thing they want or getting away from the thing they don't want. And then once they either, you know, reach their goal or they don't reach it and they die in the process, because those are the only two satisfactory endings to a drama, then the story is over. But oftentimes the writers do not create a goal that is sustainable over a period of time. Or they create a goal that audiences really don't value as a goal that's universal. So you run out of ways in which to prop that up. There's all kinds of reasons why a screenplay can fail. An outline is just to do your homework ahead of time, give yourself certain landing areas, know where the story has to be emotionally and kind of in terms of tension and other things. And then, as I say, within each scene, you're not bound by it, but it's just there as a foundation.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I have a quick question, Joel.
Yeah.
I was curious, and this is trivial compared to what they're just talking about, but it became so iconic, and half the people I know have used it, I think, over our lifetime. But where did the line "Kmart sucks" come from? Was that imagination, or was that something that was actually real? Because I've heard it 100 times.
You've heard it because it's true. And it's a truism, as well as a line from a movie. I believe it was a phrase that Joe Sullivan liked to utter. Joe Sullivan was one of several real-life Rain Men that Dustin Hoffman met and studied, gleaned from, and Joe was full of a lot of the little quip things that Dustin Hoffman said in the movie. The origin of the movie was another man. The inspiration for the movie was a man named Kim Peek, K-I-M-P-E-E-K, Kim Peek. You can Google him and see some extraordinary documentary footage that has been done on him and by a number of different countries. Just died a couple of years ago, but he was the greatest savant known to ever have existed, and just a remarkable person with a mind that just never had an equal. But anyway, back to Kmart Sucks. Yeah, after the movie, there was some noise, threatening a lawsuit with Kmart and the movie makers, which would include me. And but nothing ever came of it. That, you know, obviously, I'd know about that. So I guess they came to their senses. But I thought they'd really missed an opportunity to laugh along with it, and then, you know, maybe come out with a line of underwear called Rainwear, and you know, capitalize on it. You know, you're in the capitalizing business, but they didn't. But they got over it, and you know, it's funny that my first job ever was at one of the, I think maybe it was the first Target that ever opened in Minneapolis, which is where Target home was and still is. And Target was like the Kmart then. It was just awful. And then Target, you know, rebranded itself about 15 years ago, maybe 20. Kmart never really, you know, pull that off. So it's funny how images are created, and how what little things can do to erode a good image, and what other things can happen, like to that Korean Gangnam Style guy, where a little bit of an image thing can just create a whole new life for a person. Hey, Wynn. 7 o'clock here,
yep.
And
okay.
Remember you said this would be about 10 minutes, 15 minutes? Not that I haven't enjoyed
right.
every bit of it, but this is a warm-up for our thing, what, next Monday is it?
Saturday morning, well,
oh.
I'm not sure we clear.
Oh, yeah,
We were going to do, a couple hours with Barry Morrow as a fundraiser on Saturday, and Barry had this idea of something he wanted to test, where he thought it would be really great for people to say something and get applause. So he was just telling that to Terry and I guess 3 weeks ago, when we went and had lunch with him. Is that right?
I would frame it a little differently, if I may. I mean, we're not on a clock here. We don't have to... People don't hang up at 7 o'clock, do they?
Well, actually, I checked with BBS, and they said that we could go over today, so it's okay.
Okay.
They don't have another show coming.
No, all I was saying was that, you know, in real life, the real Rain Man, the fact that a movie was made about him is, you know, that's one in, well, he's one in a trillion people, if there ever has been a trillion. No, there hasn't, but... Whatever, however many billions of people have lived, he is, like, unique among them. But, and where was I going with this? Sorry, I just got distracted by this huge dog that was walking outside my window here. Where did he come from? Oh, I hope it's not going to be my next dog. But
the guys on this line are very used to us talking and then saying, where was I? Terry does it all the time. I do it all the time. So you're a good company.
Good. So, well, also, you know, I'm probably not quite all here or there. I'm getting to be quite an old man now, you know. That's what all you have to say. You're supposed to say, no, you're not old.
I don't think you look old or act old. So, you know.
Well,
I mean,
then, see, that's why I have to make excuses for lapses of memory. Like coming up with imaginary dogs going by my window. No, they're actually
lapses in memory, if you're like in the most avant-garde groups on the planet, people would say lapses of memory are just ascension symptoms.
Well, I have a lot of those.
They actually say that. So,
no, but literally, where was I? Remind me.
Well, we were Terry?
You were elaborating on, Vin was elaborating on the call Saturday, right? And then you were going to...
We were talking about the idea that you were suggesting.
Oh, yes. Okay, I got it. About
creating a work...
Let me finish while I have it.
Yeah.
So anyway, the movie Rain Man changed Kim's life so radically and in a good way. He was this shut-in who couldn't look at people. You know, he had all these autistic behaviors and stuff. And then this movie comes out, and he's completely, not all at once, it was over time, but a whole part of him that was like latent, like some seed buried 2 feet down in the desert. Water finally got to it, and it started to grow, and it was a personality. And he blossomed as a person. I mean, he never became a normal person. He couldn't, and we wouldn't want him to be. But he changed. So having seen that in Kim, and certainly having witnessed it with Bill and others, many, many others, it just occurred to me that, well, you'd have to do one of two things. You've got to either make a movie about everybody so that they can have that thing where they're bigger than life and everybody's looking at them and validating their existence, you know. And all of us need that, you know. You usually get it from your parents, your mother, you know, but some people don't ever get it from any source. So, and these people especially. So there it is. Your life is on a movie screen, and you can, that's not possible. So what I was saying is I just wish there was a way to give everybody their moment in the sun, in the spotlight, whatever you want to call it. And they don't have to do anything. Just bring them out on stage and have an auditorium filled with people and have them just clap and cheer and scream. Not so much scream, mostly clap and cheer and maybe cry with happiness and just bask in it and get it for like 5 minutes dose of that. And then go back into your life. And I just bet it would be a healing medicine that could change lives. Anyway, that was my idea, but I have a lot of stupid ideas.
Of course, we're not on a stage, but let's try that again. Would you guys give Barry Morrow a really enthusiastic, the great Barry Morrow here with us today, sharing his knowledge of the movie industry and how he turned people who would normally be totally unknown and unrecognized into screen heroes. Let's give Barry a round of applause. Yeah. Let's go. We're unmuted. All right, Barry?
Yes.
We don't have 10,000 people out there. Okay.
Well, even the idea of it, it made me smile. So thank you. Thank you all. You know, I just...
Now, on Saturday, we might experiment with that. Okay.
Yeah, now Saturday is what time were we talking about?
We usually do like 10 a.m. California time.
Yeah. All right.
We'll talk about, you know, Barry has some great stories. We're just going to have fun. We're going to talk about how this fellow got a job in university and became the most, this very successful coffee shop. We're also going to share with you, you know, there's a very unique thing about Barry and I, which is still unformed. And on the very day that I met Daphne in that at that hotel in the Sillamar. I was leaving and driving down the California coast, and somebody had given me Barry's phone number and said I should call him. And so I did call him, and I told him I had this book I was writing, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and we had lunch together. And a few months later, I called him, and I said, I have to tell you what's happening with my, I can't say girlfriend, Barry, I get clobbered, my personal, new personal relationship. And I told him, and he said, that's a much better movie than The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. So we have a number of lunches we did for a few years. And Barry met Daphne, he met Terry, he met, he talked to my sister, and he probably still thinks we're all nutcases. But nonetheless, that project is out there. And this will be kind of a freewheeling, fun Saturday, spending time with a person who did a movie that changed the hearts of the world, that made a dent on our entire planet. Everyone remembers that movie. So watch your emails for Saturday, and I'll unmute you all, and let's see. Anyone have anything to say?
Are you going to send us the phone number to call in on Saturday?
I am, yes. I am. I have strange sounds in there. So,
thank you, Barry.
Yeah,
well, I really enjoyed this. I mean, I miss seeing faces, but I'm feeling you out there, and thank you for thinking that this is a way to spend some time, because it's fun to share some of my thoughts. You know, I've been at this business for so long, and I do teach and stuff too whenever occasion arises. But that's how I kind of consider this as opportunity to just, I don't know, reflect on what I've learned, share it, you know, for what it's worth.
You know, we're doing a session.
Barry, can you say just two words about how your feelings are as a screenwriter about the seeing the Winfrey story on the big screen?
Well, Win is a fascinating person, and I literally think anybody's story, life story, is a movie. But you've got to be disciplined in the way you find the heart of that, and you know, Wins would be easy for me to do. It wouldn't be hard because it's very cinematic and it's very. But I'd have to figure out before I could do it who he is, and I haven't done that yet.
Right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Barry.
Yeah.
Do you did you have any interest in like metaphysics or spiritual stuff or Edgar Cayce or that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I'm a searcher, you know. I only close my mind off to things I know don't work or I know aren't real. But if anything is possible, then I'm open-minded. And I don't have a lot of time to just sit and contemplate outside of the world that I'm already doing that in, which is story. So I haven't gone very deep into any of the things you mentioned. Edgar Cayce, for instance. I remember among his first books when they came out, my sisters were reading them, and you know, I was interested to overhear their conversations, but obviously not interested enough to dig into it myself. So for me, it's a matter about you know, so many hours in a day, but my interests are pretty wide.
Right, thanks.
Thank you. Is Matt Boogaloo there? Matt Boogaloo.
Are you there, Mac Boogaloo?
Wait, his name is Mac Boogaloo?
Well, let's see. His name, his real name is Andrew Jackson, but he always...
His other name. He used to live in Hollywood.
Well, Boogaloo's pretty good. I mean, you got to admit it. Mac Boogaloo.
Mac, M-A-C.
So,
Mac.
So, Mac put up a Facebook site for our group. You know, Barry, we have like over 10,000 people getting our emails. And Art, Love, and Light is a cause to promote artists who dedicate their creative works in service to others for the greatest benefit of all humanity, Mother Earth, and our galactic family. It's also a tribute page to me and my efforts to spread the spiritual law of one messages from the group souls. And his page, if I can read it here, is, God, oh my God, not easy, can't. I'm going to have to send it, to people.
Hey, Wynn.
Art, Love, and Love. Yeah.
Wynn, listen, I'm not interested in that.
I'm just thinking about West. I'm hungry. You can go, and thank you for being here.
No, but I mean, when you figure out Mad Boogaloo, you can talk about it on Saturday. But I have dinner here, so I am going to go. But thank you all and for spending time with us. And Wynn, give me a call in the next day or two if you want to. But otherwise, I'll just be here Saturday at 10.
Great. Okay, and thank you so much for being here.
It was my pleasure.
And sharing with us.
Thanks, good night, everyone.
And thank your wife for letting us letting you be late for dinner, okay?
All right. She's
thank you, Barry.
Thanks. Bye-bye,
bye.
Guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And on that note, we will close our Monday wildcard call. See you all next time.
Your conference recording has stopped. Yeah.